1067.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. And, hey, we told you it was going to be noticeably cooler today. And with that wind, it is. It really feels cool. So, I mean, a pretty day, but, boy, the wind has been whipping all day long. And it's going to be in the, like, upper 30s tonight. And then tomorrow, even chillier, but I think the wind's going to die down, so it'll feel about the same. So welcome in, everybody, on a nice-looking chilly Thursday afternoon. It is the Drive. Dan, once again, he's not just out of the office or out of town. I mean, he's almost out of the country. He's in Anchorage, Alaska, and we'll be back. He says he'll be back in time for the show on Monday. A little programming note. We will be coming to you from Franklin Tire on Monday. Dan said he figured he'd be back in town just about in time for the start of the show. So Brian Matthews and I will be over there as well. So while Dan's in Anchorage, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, who's usually with us on Thursdays, is here in the studio. Your last couple of days here in town before you head west, but you're going to a little warmer climes than Anchorage.
Yeah, Dan and I are trying to see how much travel we can do this week. I think he's Alaska. I've never been to Alaska before. One of the few states I've never been to, but one of the others that I have not gotten to cross off my list yet is Hawaii. And I'll be there on Sunday. Yeah.
That'll be great. Yeah. He's been Baton Rouge, D.C., Anchorage. So he'll probably, the miles that he's put on here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Montana.
Buffalo, Bozeman, Montana, Denver, and back.
Incredible. So. Yeah, but, looking forward to next
Spanning
week.
Spanning the globe.
Looking forward to next week being in Maui for the first time. As somebody who grew up a huge basketball fan, I've loved the Maui Invitational.
Oh, absolutely.
I grew up watching it, and just it's going to be surreal for me to, like, cover a game in there. Somebody who's been watching it for so long. So looking forward to that, and then before we get to that Saturday night in Jordan-Hare, a chance to be, I think, a potentially fun one for Auburn. As rough as this season has gone, I think there's some potential for things to get lively on Saturday night in Jordan-Hare.
Well, I agree. I mean, it's the first night conference game that Auburn's had at home. And, they've been close. I mean, as I wrote somewhere, it ain't horseshoes, but they've been close, but they've been getting better at cutting back on the mistakes lately. I mean, last week, people may not realize this, to play an entire game without a penalty is almost unheard of.
Yeah, extremely rare. We could only go back to, I think it was like 95 or 96 was as far back as anybody in Auburn had like game logs or anything like that, and couldn't find one there.
Somebody said that they found a box score, I think, from Coach Dye's second or third season where there was a game without a penalty.
I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking 40 years.
Yeah, 40. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, they play – and this team has been very mistake-prone, penalty-prone this year. And to play – I know it's ULM, but I mean, they didn't play that clean against Alabama A&M. They didn't play that cleanly against New Mexico. So – for an Auburn team to come out there and just take care of business, play a clean game, and I think more than anything else, just continue to show that, all right, they're not packing it in. It could have been really easy
absolutely.
To be like, what do we have left to play for this year? Pack it in, move on, kind of just play out the string this year. But instead, they go and play a pretty clean game, and a very, very clean game. Some impressive moments on both sides of the ball. Still some issues, still some things that'll haunt you, but it's a college football team, and now you play an A&M team this week that, A&M's really good, and they got their sights set on the college football playoff. They've got that big matchup with Texas next week, but Auburn, Saturday night, Jordan-Hare, Auburn, as rough as things have gone for Auburn the last few seasons, you do have an opportunity to kind of get back to what Auburn does pretty well, which is destroy somebody's season. They love to undercut folks, and this is a prime opportunity to do so against an A&M team that's really good, but I think could be very vulnerable, especially with the way Auburn's defense is playing right now. I think people have under
they get better and better.
Yeah. In power conference games this year, I know they have not played a ton of top teams, although they're going to play a couple here coming up down the stretch. But even still, if you look at just power conference teams this year, Auburn nearly has a top 10 defense in yards per play and nearly a top 10 defense in points per game. I mean, they have played excellently, mm-hmm. and they're doing it with young guys.
They've done that with an offense that hasn't been scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, exactly. With no help, really, they're doing a really good job in that. Somebody asked me for the mailbag tomorrow, how much can Auburn fans look forward to the defense? Like, you know, knowing that there are some guys on that defense that are making plays that aren't going to be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran the numbers, and 5 of the top 10 players in snaps this season on Auburn's defense, so half of them are young guys. And then I think from 11 to 15, it is 4 of them. So you could say over half of your top 15.
Nine of your top 15.
Yeah. And number 15 is DeMarcus Riddick, who's been playing a lot
more and more
here recently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for Auburn, I think there's a lot to like about the direction of the defense. One of the things that has surprised me this year, probably the only thing that surprised me more than this has probably been the fact that Auburn's recruited as well as they have, considering how the season has gone. But if you look at DJ Durkin's 2 stops in the SEC as a coordinator, his first seasons were not very good. Ole Miss and A&M, they kind of went through it, took their lumps. And that second season, they made that big jump
right forward.
It's kind of surprising me that a Durkin defense has been as good as they've been this season. I think that should give you some confidence and hope for the future, because if Auburn can retain some of these guys and continue to add talent there, you definitely like what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. It's, of course, the offense is – the pressure is going to be on the offense. Pressure is going to be on Hugh Freeze, especially – in year 3 to get it right. The good news, though, for Auburn late in the season, I mean, you got 2 more opportunities to see if you can do a little something. And the fact that, you know, ULM, I think we talked about it last week, like ULM's defense isn't good. They're not a very good team, but they were improved on defense. Texas didn't really light it up offensively like people would thought. I think that game was like 56-3, and yet Texas had a couple picks, didn't really look great throwing the ball. The fact that Auburn went out there and played as cleanly as they did on offense, it's better than the alternative. It might not mean anything for this game, but it's better than like messing around and then barely getting out of there with a win or a lackluster win. They at least did some things on offense last Saturday that if you could replicate some of it against a really good A&M defense, you could be in a good spot.
It appeared Auburn made a much more concerted effort and was successful in getting the ball into their playmakers' hands.
Yeah.
That's something they just had – it felt like they hadn't done that
consistently
through the entire season.
And Cam Coleman getting 3 catches on the first drive was a tone setter. And, you know, later in the game they did go deeper to him, but the fact that he was catching short stuff, quick stuff, and running after catches, because that's the thing with Cam Coleman – is that people think, and obviously with his 3rd touchdown catch, you can see that. People think of him jump ball, crazy ball skills, like deep downfield, go up and get it type of guy. He is that guy. He's very, very good at that. He's also really good with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, he's really good at yards after catch.
Yeah.
If
you go back and watch him at Central Phoenix City, like, yes, they did a lot of shot plays there, and he made great catches downfield and in traffic of that, but, like, there's a lot of that to him where it was just – he's a great athlete, and he's got great awareness and knows what to do, you know, after he makes the catch. And I thought Auburn did a better job of letting him go get that ball and doing stuff with it after the catch. Obviously, Keandre Lambert-Smith has been pretty consistent all year long, mm-hmm. and it's been a great season for him. Malcolm Simmons getting a really good catch and run. You know, you get some of that opportunity. They didn't run the ball a ton in the game against ULM. But also, when they did, it was very effective, a really good Jarquez Hunter game. He gets his milestone to get to 1,000. So it's about as good as you would expect for an offense to look against a team like ULM. Now, the problem for Auburn is we have seen them look good on offense and then immediately a week later fall flat. But every game's a new opportunity. And I think the one thing for Hugh Freeze and this team and this offense is that they look at it and say, okay, as long as there's still dudes on the schedule, as long as there's still games left, there's an opportunity to get better. There's an opportunity to take a step forward. a decent amount of Auburn fans might be checked out on this season, but I can tell you one thing, this team is not checked out on this season, and I think they're going to try to show that Saturday night.
No, you're right. I mean, there hasn't been – I mean, hadn't even been bad body language and things like that. I mean,
when they lose, they just lose. Like they just get outplayed. You have not seen the QUIT that you may see in other teams that are in this spot, you know? I know Auburn had much higher aspirations than this year, but I look at like what Kentucky's done here recently. I look at Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. Look at some other teams that have struggled this season.
Look at LSU down the stretch.
Oh man, and it's just it's hard not to just kind of perfect example. And they've got bigger problems that aren't really Florida State. I mean, Florida State just punted.
They were done in October. Yeah, they punted it at the end of by the end of the first month.
Yeah,
like it was over.
You haven't done that yet.
1-9 1-9 after a perfect regular season last year.
1-9 at Florida State. That should be impossible. That should be impossible to do. So I mean, like if you're Auburn, you just look at this and say, okay, this season has not gone according to plan. There's going to be pressure to get better next year. There's going to be talk of like, can Auburn get this fixed?
But if they can win at least one of these last two ball games, I think everybody will feel a whole lot better the way it is heading into the offseason and future.
You'll feel better for sure. And, you know, how much does a win down the stretch matter? I think in the Iron Bowl it would be massive. I think this Saturday, I mean, you look at it, if Auburn was able to pull off this upset, and it's not even a crazy upset, it's only like
three-point underdogs.
And there's a reason for that. I'm sure we'll get into, I think there's a reason for that that people may not be picking up on as much. But anyway, if they are able to win this game, win either of these last two games, it'll be the first time in 3 years they've beaten a ranked team. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you can't look at it and say, okay, that's not objectively a good thing. It's progress. Now you got to capitalize on it, and it's a long off season. There's so many different directions this roster could go. But it's an opportunity to go into the offseason and say, hey, we at least showed we can compete at this level.
Right.
We can win at this level.
And that's what they need to do. They've shown they can play with all these teams.
Yep.
I mean, they've been competitive.
But this is a results-oriented
business.
They've been
competitive, but they need a win.
They
got to
get over the hump. They got to get over the hump because, so far this season it has been just – woulda, coulda, shoulda,
mm-hmm.
And as Freeze said a few weeks ago, I mean, he's evaluated on results. And as much as people might want to sit here and say, oh, well, the recruiting's good. Oh, well, look at this and look at that. The fact of the matter is you're going to have a losing season at Auburn, and that's never acceptable. You got to do better. You got to do better moving forward. This is an opportunity to get a head start on that.
And I like the way a lot of things are set up for this. I mean, we mentioned the fact that it's a night game. It's a home game. It's the last home game. I mean, Texas A&M they've only been on the road, really. They've left the state of Texas twice. They went to Starkville, mm-hmm. and then they just absolutely got embarrassed in Columbia.
They went to Florida too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Was that not in Florida?
Their road games were the Arkansas game was a road game in Dallas.
Okay. Why was that? Why did I say think that?
I don't know. I mean, I've got the SEC
schedule. No, that game was in Florida.
Okay. Well,
September week three.
The SEC released helmet schedule shows that it was in College Station. That's crazy. Look, I'm looking at the SEC. Look, that's what the SEC put out.
Well, now
which is
I'm
crazy.
Now I'm looking at it and it says it was in. Okay, hold on. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Because I pulled up the SEC schedule, look at it, and I went, well, let me look at the SEC helmet schedule. I apologize.
September 14, 2024, Marcel Reed wins in the Swamp, 33-20.
Okay, my bad.
Okay, but again, so part of that is yes, they've only played four games away from College Station.
And one of them was in Dallas.
The only time they've covered the spread has been that Florida game back in week three. The last time they went on the road, they were 3-point favorites and got beat by 24 mm-hmm. at South Carolina. They did not beat Mississippi State like people thought they would. They didn't really beat Arkansas like people thought they would at that point in the year as well. So that I think that's playing a lot into the line. I think that's affecting it. And then I think also some of it is just that people are looking up and say, outside of Georgia, which that game got away from in the second half, outside of Georgia, Auburn's been pretty competitive against everybody.
I mean, Texas A&M sort of been the opposite of Auburn. I mean, they've won some of those ball games. They've won those ball games. They have not had the toughest schedule in the country either, though. I mean, people talk about Texas' schedule.
Yeah.
A&M's schedule's turned out to be pretty favorable for them.
I mean, their best win is who? LSU?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And LSU's now 6-4.
And that one's starting to fade. Yeah, they've beaten Florida. They've beaten Arkansas. They've beaten some solid teams, but they have not beaten a really great team. And for Auburn, it's just I look at A&M and I say, all right, well, you competed and should have won against a team like Missouri. You know, why not A&M at home? Like, mm-hmm. it's going to be tough, but yeah, I think the line's as close as it is for a reason. Now Auburn's going to have to play well.
Oh yeah,
but you know, I think when I look at A&M, I have seen. Even with Marcel Reed taking over, like I have seen,
there's no Le'Veon Moss though.
Le'Veon Moss. There's been, they've just had some lower scoring games. Mm-hmm. Auburn's defense is playing well. They're at home. They're at night. You could at least talk yourself into okay. You might not need your offense to go nuts in order to have a chance to win this game. It's just they can't have the Vandy game, the Oklahoma finish, the Cal game, the Arkansas game.
Like you can't give A&M short field and points because nope. I mean the odds are it's going to be a fairly low scoring ball game.
Yeah.
If you hold them, I think if you hold them to around 20, you've got a really good shot.
Yeah, but you got to get to 20.
That's right,
and that's been easier said than done for this offense this year, and it's weird. Somebody asked me. You know, how much do I think Auburn's offense is better or worse than it was last season? And the funny thing is like they are
everything's better except points.
Yeah, they're a touchdown worse than they were last
year. That's crazy.
And the other thing is like, well, people can point to like, okay, what about turnovers? Turnover rate's pretty much the same as it was last season because they've tailed
most
off.
Most of turnovers happen on the front end.
Yeah, you know they're giving up a little bit more sacks this year. Tackles for loss are kind of the same. Running game's kind of the same. Passing game's better. The big thing.
Oh, yeah, remember the run of sub 100 yard passing games.
The thing that struck me though, when I was looking it up today, Auburn last season against Power Conference competition scored touchdowns on 68% of their trips in the red zone, which is fine. It's not wonderful, but it was fine. It was like top 40 in the country. This year, it's like
not
30.
This year.
It's like
30%. I mean, Auburn's dead last in the SEC in red zone offense.
Yeah. I mean, like, and you could say missed field goals hurt you, and you can say turnovers hurt you, and that's all true. The fact is, they're not converting. Like,
no.
They're just not nearly the amount they were at last season, mm-hmm. and that's been such a huge step back.
Texas A&M is the best in the SEC. They scored 38 of 40 times in the red zone with 29 touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah. And Auburn's defense.
Auburn's defense third in the SEC in red zone defense.
They've been a bend don't break defense. They've been doing less bending here recently. But yeah, for Auburn, it's just like you can't. I mean, they're 110th in the country in points per scoring opportunity, and it's just like you can't live that way. But you know, like I said, every other game's a new opportunity. You can look at what Auburn has failed to do in the red zone this season and say, well. You had a drop here. You had a negative play here. You had a bad play call there, but X, Y, and Z. You know, if those things are truly fixable, this is your opportunity to show that they were fixable. And this A&M defense is really, really good, but we have seen them struggle at times this year. And you know, they're vulnerable like any team at this point. And I think just college football in general this season, everybody's been vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're just underway. We need to get to our first break of the show. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. You can text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and that number is 334-564-1840. We'll get to our first break. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
The Grammy-winning songs. Then AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And we mentioned that, Justin going to be in Maui Sunday afternoon. Well, let's head to the phones, and our first caller, Jared, is calling us from Hawaii. What is it, about 10:30 out there, 11:30?
It's actually 12:30 in the afternoon.
Wow. Okay. Only 4 hours difference. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's we don't have daylight savings times here in Hawaii, so when that happened, it got closer, I guess.
Wow. Well. Hey, it's great to hear from you. What's going on?
Oh, definitely. No, just looking forward to the games next week. I'm on Oahu, but I'm flying over to Maui for the Monday game. So looking forward to seeing Auburn play Iowa State and just this team. It's been great to see them come together. They look so much better than even last year's team. So definitely excited to see them.
Yeah, you know, early on, and we were talking about it with Bruce yesterday. I mean, the willingness of this team to share the ball. I mean, yeah. They really have been very unselfish to this point, and they've got a lot of guys that can hurt you.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Looking to see how they respond. I mean, since they looked really good against Houston, now this is a different type of game since you're coming to Hawaii and got Iowa State. So it'll be definitely interesting. And I read Ferg's article earlier today about the stretch four, about the type of style they play and everything. So it sounds like it's going to be an exciting game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the one of the things that I pointed out, and I appreciate the shout out, by the way. The other thing that strikes me as interesting in this game is that Auburn has gone to Houston and beaten a Houston team on the road. Iowa State, very good basketball team, always awesome on defense, have not played a top 200 team yet.
No.
And so it's going to be very interesting to see how Auburn.
That doesn't mean that they're not
sure
great and ready for the game.
I'll be interested to see how this one starts, especially because Auburn has seen a team that defends kind of like Houston, but there are some differences. They've got a really good defensive backcourt. And, yeah, you said you were going to the game on Monday. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better one. I mean, right off the bat, these are the two of the three best teams in the field playing you know, at the very start of this tournament. And then, of course, UConn on the other side of the bracket that Auburn could play eventually on Wednesday. But, yeah, it's top five matchup with the AP poll. I mean, this will be one of the biggest games of the year for Auburn.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, and I mean, their next four looks incredibly difficult. So it's like it'll be interesting to see how they respond, and then that sets them up for the rest of the year. So I think, regardless, they're setting themselves up for the tournament.
Yeah, 100%. And I think Auburn looked to the examples of Alabama and Tennessee these last few years and just said, hey, if you schedule really, really tough and you take some losses, it doesn't really hurt you that much. And yeah, I mean, and then playing in Maui, as prestigious as it is, I mean, Chad Baker-Bazaar said it yesterday. It's like, the only other time you're going to play 3 in 3 days is in Nashville, and you'll play 2 in 3 days in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this will get you battle tested for sure. And yeah, I mean, you think about it, a potential, like if there's a scenario where Auburn could play Iowa State, North Carolina, UConn, and Duke their next four games, and that's, I mean, you couldn't have schemed up a tougher schedule. Now it could go differently. You could play
Dayton.
You could play Dayton. You could play somebody like Colorado or Michigan State on the other side. But yeah, I mean, it is as good of an early test as Auburn could get. And the good news is, it's why that Houston game was so big. You've already proven that you can go do that. It'd be different if you were like, okay, you've taken that loss. You need to see if you can hang with the elites, win a really big one like this away from home. You've already done that. If you can stack one or two more of these in these next four games, I mean, you're gonna be golden for the rest of your non-conference slate.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I hope you enjoy your flight over. It's a long flight, but look to see you on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I was telling Bill we changed planes in Vegas, so we get to kind of split it up a little bit, which I'm looking forward to. But yeah, can't wait to get out there, and looking forward to the week for sure.
Oh, definitely. Well, enjoy your time out here and look forward to seeing you Monday.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Hey, it's great hearing from you, Jared.
Definitely. War Eagle, y'all.
All right, take care. That's cool.
Very cool. Very cool.
See, I mean, again, we tell folks you can listen to us anywhere. And it's great that, I mean, Jared listening live out in Oahu.
Yeah, that's really cool. And yeah, I'm glad I got to the bottom of the whole time thing. I felt like the time thing, like I should have known that.
I was thinking it should have been more, but I knew there was a huge time zone, but I didn't realize it's just basically one.
Yeah, and it makes sense though, because like there's not a whole lot out there. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. We can make it bigger because there's not a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of space to, or not a whole lot of places to cover in that. But yeah, I mean, I'm really, really looking forward to the trip. And yeah, this Auburn basketball team is this is an opportunity to send a message. You know, Bruce said yesterday, if they could win a couple of games out there. They love it. How hard it is to win out there. Mm-hmm. Only two SEC teams have ever done it. Only one in my lifetime, and that was like 3 months after I was born. Vandy won it in 93, or Kentucky won it in 93. Vandy won it in like 88 or 89. It's really tough to win out there, especially with the way the field is. Like, I think UConn's in a really good spot to right. kind of just walk to the mm-hmm. title game. Auburn, you know, potentially playing Iowa State and North Carolina could be pretty daunting. But like I said, like you stack up one or two really good quality wins in this thing, go to Duke and see what you do there. I mean, you're playing with house money. I think the rest of your night.
Yeah, you're not going to face anything tougher than that. I mean, there'll be a couple yeah. of times where you do.
Yeah.
I mean, in conference, but it's not going to be any tougher than that, and especially in as short a period of time.
Yeah. No, it's it'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing I'm looking forward to, these matchups. You think of Iowa State, like I said, haven't been tested yet this season.
You're going to get to see some pretty good teams. I'm so
looking forward to that. And then you come back to Duke, and it's like Duke took one off the chin with Kentucky. What happened in that game? Kentucky used their defense and their experience to outwit, you know, Duke in that second half. Obviously, doing that in Cameron's going to be easier said than done. But I think. I said it when this matchup got announced. I think Auburn, you want to catch Duke in December. You don't want to catch mm-hmm. Duke in February or March.
Well, and this is the kind of team that you feel like you've got a shot taking this yeah. experienced a group to Duke against a young team.
I mean, like I said, I've said it several times now. Like you go down the way they did at Houston and come back and win. I was reading through the stats the other day, just kind of flipping through it, and I realized it didn't even click with me until do you know how many points Auburn scored in the final 10 minutes against Houston?
It was just about all free throws.
31. Wow. Final 10 minutes, 31 points against a team.
That's unbelievable against Houston.
They're,
I mean, 31 points and a half against Houston
is great.
Okay.
Yeah. 31 in the quote-unquote fourth quarter. Mm. They had 31 against Houston. So if you can do that, you can look at an Iowa State team. You can look at a Duke team on the road. You could potentially look at UConn.
And they didn't do it because they were unconscious shooting threes either.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they hit
some.
They hit some, but it's not like, well, everybody was just unconscious, and yeah. you know they'll never be able to replicate that.
And I'm sure y'all have talked about it this week at some point, but one of the most remarkable things about this team coming into this tournament is it's hard to be. I mean, it is a luxury to have an elite center in college basketball because there's not a ton of, especially mm-hmm. now with you know guys like Edie and Donovan Klingon are gone. Jani Broome is like far and away been the best college basketball player in the country in the first couple weeks. Like he is averaging 20 and 13 and three blocks right now. Like that is
and in like 28 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's just like that's the average performance yeah. for him is crazy. It's super, super crazy. And you know, for Auburn, it's like they, you know, Bruce said it yesterday, like their strength is gonna be their depth. And especially if they have Jakai Howard and Turtle Hudson back and playing in this tournament. If you're playing three games in 3 days, not very many teams are going to go 11 deep and feel confident in that. So that should give you a strength. And you know what you're going to get out of Jani Broome pretty much every game. But the good news for Auburn is like everybody else, pretty much everybody else on that team, you could say that could be their night. And if you just get one or two of those.
A handful or more players that can put up 20 anytime.
And this is another mailbag question I got that's going to go up tomorrow. But they were talking about like, okay, you beat Houston, Jani went off, Tahai went off. You know, do you feel like you have to do that to beat? I mean, I said, well, look at this. Auburn's got five guys that are averaging in double figures. They only had three in that game, and Chaney barely got in there.
Mm-hmm.
You had hardly 11, right. anything. Until the very end from Chad Baker-Mazzara, and you had hardly anything from Miles Kelly in that game. And mm-hmm. then now you're like, okay, if they just hit a couple more shots, if each of those guys hit a couple more shots and they're closer to their average, what does that game look like for Auburn against Houston? And what does that game for Auburn look like against a team like Iowa State? That's going to be the fun part.
Yeah, can't wait. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Just a quarter of the way into the show. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
1-800-361-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Auburn football this Saturday night against Texas A&M. An A&M team coming in that is in the playoff picture right now. I mean, if they beat Auburn, they'll be playing Texas for an opportunity to for sure be in the SEC championship game. I haven't really looked at it, and I guess partially because Auburn's nowhere near involved in this. But if Texas beats A&M and there are five teams with two losses, I mean, then you're going to get into all the SEC tiebreakers. And
we have Pascal on today?
Yes.
Okay, he can explain it.
He probably will.
I can't figure that out at all.
It's crazy, the tiebreaker situation. Lane Kiffin, it's funny. Lane has come out saying, you know, he doesn't think it's fair, and I agree with him.
I agree, yeah.
That a team that loses a conference championship game should be penalized. I don't think they're going to win the tiebreaker when I look at it. I don't think Ole Miss. So, I mean, Lane can say that, but he's probably sitting back going, we're going to be in no matter what as long as we win out here in the regular season. We're not going to the conference championship game, and we're not going to lose.
Georgia looks like they're going to be that way, too, after beating Tennessee. I mean,
they should just about. I mean, if they got
UMass and Georgia Tech to finish the year. So
Tech could give them, you know.
Yeah, it's just like just play well, and you're out of there. You're out of there with it. And that's the thing that really, I mean, and I don't want this to sound like, you know, revisionist history, but one of the things that when these conferences started expanding like crazy, and it was like, well, we got to get rid of divisions. Okay, great. Get rid of divisions, balance the schedules out better. That's right. But what was going to happen if you get into this scenario where
every year there are going to be a lot of teams that don't play each other?
Yeah, and then like
no matter how balanced the schedule is.
And I remember when it happened, people were saying like, "Well, you know, it'll sort itself out." And literally in the first year, we're having a situation where
I love it because of that.
Yeah,
I mean that you've got six teams in this league that have one or two losses right now with two weeks to go.
And I understand the appeal of expanding your conference. For Texas to bring in Texas and Oklahoma for the SEC was a big financial boost for them, a big prestige boost. I get all that. I understand all that. It's just that like you make a mess of trying to figure out who your champion is because not everybody plays each other, and there's no like with no divisions. There's no like okay, we'll just beat the teams in your division and you're in. Now you're in this like weird tiebreaker crazy scenario, and. In all actuality, you don't need a conference championship game most of the time. Like, most of the time, it's done more harm than good for a team's playoff chances in this era. I think of the Big 12 constantly screwing themselves out of a playoff
spot. Yeah, the SEC's been extremely fortunate.
Yes, they have not had one of these situations yet. They don't need a conference title game, but it's just it makes too much money. It just makes
much money. But when... And it's going to happen this year.
Yeah,
and it's going to be an SEC team. I mean, an SEC team's not going to make the playoff going in, qualifying for their conference championship game and losing. I mean, there's no way that I can see this committee, which seems to penalize you for a loss no matter who it's to,
right?
And credit you for a win no matter who it's against,
right?
Strength of schedule hasn't really mattered.
Nope.
I mean, you see, Georgia was hanging at number 12 until they got the win last week. But when that two-loss SEC team loses that third game and falls out, then you're going to have teams saying, why are we even playing the championship game? And it is for the money. There's no question.
It's for the money.
But
and the committee can sit there and say, oh, having a 13th game is better for us. Like, no, all this is made up. Like, all of this is made up. There is no consistent logic. There is no consistent through line from year to year. All this is made up. So, like, yeah, it's just going to do more harm than good.
I want there to be a formula that I can plug things into and figure out who the teams are going to be.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, because it changes. Sometimes it changes from week to week. It definitely changes from year to year.
We had that. It's called the BCS.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, and And the more and more, the farther we get away from the BCS, again, maybe the two teams playing for a national title and having a playoff and all that wasn't the best. But like, at least if you have something a little bit more transparent, and it let the computers pick who's in the playoff. Like, that would at least be more than just being a group of people where there's different biases and there's different backgrounds and there's different, like, it's a mess. And then you have somebody have to go out there and try to explain it all to you, and it never.
No.
It's a tiny bit of prompting, like prodding, is just everything falls apart.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I don't know how you fix it. Like, I don't know how you fix it. I mean, my grand plan to, well, if we're not doing my ultimate grand plan to fix college football conferences, but it was like, if the SEC ever gets into a point where it's like, all right, let's go to 20, and here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get 20, and we're gonna separate you into two.
Right.
And then
everybody plays everybody in their own conference or division or whatever.
Yep. And then you just say, hey, that's your champion. There's your champion. If we want to put those two teams together and put them in a SEC title game and still make the money, great. But that can't hurt them.
Yeah.
That can't hurt them.
That's the thing. Why would you do it? The reason you do it is for money. But, I mean, it doesn't really – it hurts the loser more than it helps the winner.
Yeah.
Much, much more. And so Steve texts in and says, got to go to 9 conference games. Well, the way this committee this year is penalizing teams for losses, there's no way that the SEC is going to vote to go to 9. I'd love them to go to 9 conference games.
I think all of us would love them to go to 9, but it is not showing.
I don't think it's going to happen now. And the sad thing is, hey, get ready for it, folks. That means the Auburn-Georgia game is gone on a yearly basis. The Alabama-Tennessee game is gone on a yearly basis. That is the truth.
And the problem is that if you go to – if you stay at 8, there's no even way to fix it. Like,
there's no
clean way. 9, if you want to do pods, if you want to do the 3-6-6 mm-hmm. rotation, those are all clean. But if you're not giving reasons for, like, you need to give a good enough reason for a team to want to go to 9.
Right.
Because right now the SEC is not being punished for not going to 9. They're not.
No, they're not.
No. They can play that. They can play one fewer game. They can play UMass or whoever, and it'll be fine. And like, people who are Big Ten fans and ACC fans and all those, you know, Big 12 fans can complain about it. But the fact of the matter is like, until the SEC has a reason to change, they are not going to change. They have all the power. They have all they have all the leverage.
They do, but I've heard people say, well, just wait, and if only a couple of SEC teams or 3 teams make the field this year of 12 this year, the SEC will just say, all right, that's it, we're taking our ball and leaving. And doing what?
Yeah.
And doing what? I mean, that sounds great, but who's going to come with them? So
Big Ten, maybe.
Why?
Yeah,
if the Big Ten's getting 4 or 5 teams in, why do they want to leave? The Big Ten's going, hey, you leave, that's more teams for us.
Sure.
And, I mean, it sounds great to say that, but then the SEC would just have to count on, all right, the Southeast is just going to watch us.
Yeah,
we'll just be a completely another league.
Yep.
In college football, there'll be the rest and then the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, and it
I
would
mean
be-
it's a mess. And I you're right. I don't see a feasible solution.
No, because the whole Super League splitting off stuff only works if other teams do it.
Everybody has to do it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or at least like the other conferences that really matter have to mm-hmm. do it. Otherwise, you're just gonna look like, well, we can just do our own thing. Like, yeah, you can, but like, no one's like, are people really gonna be excited about that? You know.
Well, so, you know, you could get. I mean, the thing is, you could expand the super conferences to like, you could go to 3 24 team,
yeah,
conferences, and have 12 teams play 11, play the other 11 teams.
Yep.
And then if you wanted to play a title game, fine, that's just for seeding. And that would be for
seeding in your postseason. My plan I came up with recently was 4 20-team conferences with the 10 divisions,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody play everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need more than – it's going to need more than 64
teams.
Here's
what you can do, and you can stay with this format this way. Say you have the SEC split into two, right? And the SEC, you have a champion there and a champion there. Then those two teams are going to play for an SEC championship game And that can, and the winner basically gets a bye.
Winner, that's exactly right. You're playing for seeding. Well, yeah. That's what I was saying.
And so get to that four. Yes. Get to four. Just give me those four. If you win your if you win the big, your 10-team conference division, whatever you want to call it, is one. And then if you win
you had to play
an extra game. Well, if you win it, you get one off. Mm-hmm. And if you lose it, it doesn't really hurt you because you're still going to be in the playoff.
That's right. You know you're in if you win your division or whatever you want to call it, your conference.
And basically what happens there is you have eight champions. You can still have a group of five. And then you have a few at-large for teams that just missed the cut. And I think that's a better way to do it than necessarily like saying, okay, this year – we know that the Big 12 is not very good, but they're going to be guaranteed a bye no matter what. Sorry, Ohio State and Oregon. You may be the two best teams in America, but whoever loses that rematch, you're not getting a bye.
Well, that's where you either have to have enough spots for all those teams because I mean,
at least balance it out and try to play.
Look at most sports. It doesn't matter if you're from a weak division in a lot of professional sports.
No, not at all.
You win that division, you're in. You know, now you may not get a bye. You may have to play the wild card or something like that. You can do similar things with college football to have it make more sense than what we have right now. All right, we're coming up on our final break. We'll go ahead and get to our final break, and then we'll be back with Lenny. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Remember when you would dream?
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of hour number one of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio, and let's get right to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and Lynn. Is up next. Hey, Lynn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Do you really believe that the SEC will take their ball and go home if this thing doesn't? Because as someone who has envisioned us being a Savannah State, I shudder to imagine what would happen if it got to that point.
Yeah, under the current circumstances, I can't.
No.
Because like I asked Justin, I said, who's coming with them?
Yeah, somebody's got to come with them.
You'd just have the SEC by themselves, and there would be some teams in this league that go, I don't know that's what we want to just be to have the rest of college football.
We would have lost the plot so much if we got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that happens. Do you see us playing a Savannah State just A, for sense of humor reasons, and B,
you need to play somebody. I mean, because with 16 teams,
sure.
You can't. I mean, unless you say, all right, we're just going to play a 15-game schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could.
And that's the other thing. Like one of the things that's being talked about right now is you know, there's a lot of people who are up in arms about the SEC because they're like playing FCS games and like the Big Ten doesn't do that. And I've always been a proponent of saying, hey, let's play one FCS game. It means so much to those schools to get that financial benefit. And if we are just saying, hey, we've got all the money and we're going to do things our way and we're going to stick to ourselves, and we're not going to help out anyone else, or we're not going to be part of this ecosystem that is college football, I think we've just completely lost what this is all about. And so I do like the fact that you could play a Savannah State or an Alabama State. Yay. Or Alabama A&M. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always envisioned that because of someone who likes to get my sleep. I've been telling people here, I once envisioned that what would happen if Auburn went to the Mountain West, right?
the old ACC rumors that have always been floating
because
around.
I can just see it now. Sleep. The most fortunate thing in the world we get as people. Sleep. So before we even do any pregame, sleep. So that we'll be able to, one, sleep, two, eat decently, and maybe if we care, go out and enjoy the nation's best fun.
Wow, that's some deep thoughts by Lynn as we, yeah, man, great stuff. Good hearing from you, Lenny. We will get to our top of the hour break. David Paschal from Chattanooga joins us in hour number two. Hope you will as well here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive, a brisk, breezy Thursday, and be ready. Temperature's going to be dropping down below 40 tonight and going to be a little chillier even tomorrow. Going to carry that way through the weekend. It's going to feel great, I think, for football on Saturday. I think we won't have winds as nearly as strong as we've had today. Temperatures going to be probably in the low 50s at kickoff on Saturday, and they'll drop into the 40s. But it is, we are approaching Thanksgiving. We're a week away from Thanksgiving. And, so Auburn, Texas A&M, the final home game for the Tigers this Saturday night. Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can text us right now on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcasts of The Drive, wherever you get your podcasts. But our phone lines, we'll be able to get to your calls a little later on. But initially, we're going to head to the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar, and call in our good friend from Chattanooga, from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and from his show that just wrapped up on WGOW there in Chattanooga, and that's David Paschal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I am doing wonderful, Bill. Hope you are.
I'm doing fine. It's Bill and Justin here in the studio today. Dan is in Anchorage with the Troy women's team, so he's in a little cooler climate than we are. Justin's going to be heading out. He was telling me, Justin, you were saying you're leaving the press box at Jordan-Hare Stadium Saturday night.
Yep.
To Atlanta.
Going back home, picking up my wife, and we're going straight to the airport because we have a 6:30 flight on Sunday morning to begin our journey to Maui for the tournament next week.
Nice. When I was in the fall of 89, I graduated in August of 89, but that fall I worked for the athletic department with David Housel and John Lewandowski. And, of course, the fall of 89 not only had a first-ever visit from Alabama in the Iron Bowl, but it also had an appearance in the Great Alaskan Shootout. And so John Lewandowski took me and Chuck Galena. We were the two student assistants that he took out to – the Great Alaskan Shootout, and we saw Auburn finish 8th out of 8. it was around Thanksgiving week, and it was one of those deals where it was like it got light around 9:30 in the morning, and it got dark at 4 in the afternoon. So you had about seven and a half hours of daylight every day, and that was it.
Yeah, well, I was a little busy then because I was in the ticket office at that time, and we had something pretty big going on. As you said, that the Alabama's first trip in, so yeah, that's cool that you got to go that's out awesome. There. I haven't left. I haven't been to the 49th and 50th states yet. So planning on doing that at some point. But yeah. So Dan's in Alaska, and Ferg's going to be headed to Maui after this weekend's games. David, we were talking and got into it a little bit a while ago. I mean, just about this mess that we have with college football in the playoffs. I think you and I have talked about this, and it's great, some of the craziness that there is. You know, so many people heading into this year thinking, well, this expanding the playoffs to 12 is crazy because there aren't nearly that many teams that are deserving. There are, without question, going to be some teams left out this year that feel like, It's ridiculous that they're either being penalized for losing a conference championship game. I can't see that not affecting negatively the playoff picture for this year. And then the committee seemingly not really caring who you beat or who you lose to. It's just all about wins and losses.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a mess. I mean, you know, when you've got Lane Kiffin coming out on Monday saying he's talked to other SEC coaches saying they don't even want to be in the SEC championship game, that the risk is much greater than the reward of getting in there, winning the thing, and getting a bye, the risk of suffering that third loss and getting eliminated. And that's sad because, I mean, I don't know if we talked about this or not, but this has been an issue really that's 20 years old, because I'll never forget being on the Georgia Dome floor when Auburn beat Tennessee to cap that 12-0 at the time. They would go on to 13-0, but you kind of had, you know, you had a lot of people that were celebrating a conference championship, and that was in 2004. That was the first SEC title then since 89 that we were just talking about. So you had the celebration, but you also kind of had this dark cloud hanging above it saying, well, did they do enough to supplant USC and Oklahoma in the BCS championship game? And I hated that kind of talk, because I just always, I'm such a traditionalist, and I think it should mean something to win the conference. I mean, that's kind of like being the best in your neighborhood. I know you want to be the best in the country instead of the best in your neighborhood, but there's something about, you know, fighting against teams that you see every day. And so, you know, I'm going to miss that about college football. And it's kind of really already gone when you think about the fact that Georgia and South Carolina aren't playing this year. Alabama and Mississippi State, the two closest schools in the league, aren't playing this year. So, you know, you've got that aspect to it. And of course, the big story this week was the strength of schedule. And
right.
You've got Ward Manuel, you know, the committee chair, just basically saying, yeah, strength of schedule is a component, but, you know, we basically, what carries the day is us watching the games. And you're like, what does that even mean? If Indiana's wailing on Western Illinois, do you just take that as, you know, hey, they could beat the Chiefs? I mean, it's crazy because, and I thought Kirby Smart was spot on in the SEC teleconference yesterday when he's like, you know, it cracks me up when these people get on these shows and say, well, they've got a number three defense or a number five defense. It's like, don't you think that's dictated by who you play?
Absolutely it is. And you know, one of the things we were talking about is, look, why would anyone in this conference, why would any school in this conference vote to go to 9 conference games now if this is going to be the case?
Yeah, and we talked about that. We talked a little about that last week, Bill, and I agree. I mean, I think this was always a deal where, and I understood the arguments of those teams wanting to keep it at 8. I mean, you've had teams like Kentucky and South Carolina and Arkansas that for years, I mean, there are plenty of those years where they have to count up 6 wins for bowl eligibility. But, you know, Nick Saban for forever was like, I'd like to go to 9 games. I remember Gus Malzahn said he'd be for 9 games. Kirby has said 9 games. But, you know, I think we could be looking with the message that the playoff committee is sending when they meet in Destin. I mean, that could, if that's when they vote, it could be 16-0 to stay at 8, which would be just an unbelievable shame, because now you're talking about implementing that 1-7 model where Auburn and Georgia are playing twice every 4 years and Alabama and Tennessee are playing twice every 4 years. And to me, again, this is where I'm so into the tradition and the rivalries, because that is what has made SEC football what it is.
No, you're absolutely right. That would mean after next year, yeah, just get ready for something completely different. And it would be a huge disappointment. There's no question about it. Right now, as we head down the stretch, I mean, you've got 6 teams in the league with 1 or 2 losses, and the tiebreakers are going to have to come into effect. I mean, it's not just going to take care of itself where there's a clear cut. All right, here are the 2 best teams, and they're going to play in the title game.
Yeah, I mean, most indicators right now are pointing to the Texas A&M winner against Alabama. I mean, obviously there are a lot of games this week that could change that. But, you know, it is kind of unique that we laugh at Indiana, you know, and they're sitting there with a schedule ranking of 106. You think about Alabama, their 6 league games have all come against teams they're at least 3-3 in league play. I mean, you think about Georgia's finished at 6-2, Tennessee's at 5-2,
You know, they've got even LSU and Vandy are 3-3. Missouri's 3-3. So they played a good schedule. It is just wild to think about some of these, like Billy Napier. I mean, the fact that by the end of this Saturday, he will have played number 3, number 8, number 9, number 10, number 11, and number 15. And Indiana's sitting there at 106.
Yeah. And Billy is justifying Scott Strickland's endorsement of him. They come back, they knock off an LSU team that is really struggling coming down the stretch. And I think they, you know, I don't know that I don't think they're going to beat them, but I think they're going to give Ole Miss all that they can, you know, all that they want this coming Saturday down in Gainesville.
See, I think, you know, I tend to take the other side just a little bit because I think you're right. They're definitely growing, and I just don't know with Ole Miss having an open date.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a tough ask for Florida to keep playing better and better and better. Because even though LSU beat Ole Miss head to head, there's just no question who's the better of the team, the here and now. But you know what I've heard from Florida, and Florida's going to be an interesting test case, Bill, because I think it's a deal where instead of the buyout for Billy Napier, which I think is like $26 million, I think a lot of the boosters have said, well, instead of paying that, why don't we take half that and let's put that toward NIL money and try to give Lagway a chance to really take us to another level.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, go ahead and you're going to get a good bit of return, hopefully, for that if you invested wisely in players and multiple players. That makes an awful lot of sense. I was just thinking, Florida right now is playing loose. They've got nothing to lose. They're going to beat Florida State and get bowl eligible. So I just figured they'll play pretty loose against Ole Miss. But yeah, the Rebels are in great shape. And I thought it was funny with Lane saying that the other day, because it's very unlikely that they're going to get to the SEC championship game, so he can sit back and go, yeah, I feel bad for that team that gets bumped behind us in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's weird. And so much can change. We still have 2 more weeks and then the conference championships, but just the way those rankings came in, the fact that not only is the SEC potentially getting shuffled out with Tennessee right now being on the outside looking in, but you've got, if the ratings held today, Texas would obviously get the bye, but then you'd have the SEC teams all playing on the road. And I wonder how much of that's going to come into play with the power-hungry SEC and the power-hungry Big Ten, because not only do they want a bunch of teams in, they want a bunch of teams being able to host that mm-hmm. first game, because that's more do-re-mi.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Love to get your thoughts on some of the other games. We mentioned that Ole Miss-Florida game. That's the first game. There are a lot of games this week that don't really need to have a lot of time spent on them. I mean, this is really that week that we've seen this years and years. It's that warm-up before you play your rivalry week game. With teams like UMass and Wofford and on the schedule, but there are a couple of pretty interesting ones. The night schedule is pretty interesting. With I think Alabama shouldn't have much trouble on the road against Oklahoma. Oklahoma's defense has been solid, but I don't think their offense is capable of staying with Alabama if Alabama just breaks a couple of plays.
Yeah, and it's funny because this week has historically been really, really brutal. I think like LSU Ole Miss used to kind of be like the highlight of this week, mm-hmm. and then everybody else was playing directional schools. But, you know, they have made it better than it typically is. And you know, you think about it, Alabama, Oklahoma at the beginning of the year.
Oh, it sounded great.
It sounded great. And these two teams since World War II are the two winningest teams in college football. Oklahoma's number one and Bama's number two. But yeah, when you're this deep into the season, still going back and forth between Hawkins and Jackson Arnold, that's not good. And I know it's going to cause a cringe there, but I mean the fact that Oklahoma even has one SEC win because they really shouldn't have won that one.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. I'm really intrigued by the game in Baton Rouge Saturday night. I mean, LSU now at 6-4, they have really stumbled here lately. Absolutely got just toyed with by Alabama. Vandy's coming in. I mean, they're already bowl eligible. I wonder how much is left in LSU's tank, how much they care about playing. And I think Vandy's just beside themselves at the opportunity to get a seventh win down in Baton Rouge Saturday night.
Well, and you look at what's given LSU trouble, and it's been the mobile quarterback. I mean, you've seen what Milroe did, and of course Vandy's got the definition of that with Diego Pavia. So from that aspect, you would think that this game is going to be tied. I do wonder what's just happened to LSU's. I mean, they just haven't been able to have any explosive plays. Their Nussmeier's really struggled. That offense has just really gotten bland. And so, yeah, this is pretty much a pride game for them. You've got, what, six teams in the SEC that are 8-2 or better, and LSU's not one of them.
Right.
So that's pretty inexcusable there. So you would think, you know, just on pride alone, that LSU, you know, would somehow make some kind of stand, because they've gone from 6-1 to 6-4 really fast, because all three of those losses have been double digits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, LSU just, I mean, they don't run the ball, they can't run the ball, and their defense, I think it sort of got overlooked at times. Their defense just hasn't been very good under Brian Kelly. We thought it was a little better earlier this year, but you're right, they don't look like they've even practiced for a mobile quarterback.
Yeah, now, of course, obviously Harold Perkins will go down as one of your bigger blows.
No question.
Given that LSU isn't great defensively to begin with, and you lose your best player early. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, you win 10 games your first 2 years. You even sneak out that West title the first year, and you're like, hey, this is a really nice hire. Now all of a sudden they're 6-4, and people are got the cameras on all the sideline heated exchanges and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it's tough. LSU, I dug it up. They're like 37-23 since they won that national championship. And, of course, that's one of the most impressive runs to a national championship you'll see. I mean, that was a dominating 15-0.
No question.
I mean, Alabama and Auburn were the only teams that even sniffed them. But, yeah, 37-23 for their standards. After winning a natty is pretty mediocre.
Oh, you're right. Well, sadly, speaking of pretty mediocre, that's Auburn. I don't know. Well, they can't even say they've been that over the last few years. Here is their final home game, their first night conference game, with Texas A&M coming in, and A&M, you know, everyone looking forward to that big matchup next week against Texas in College Station. But David, I think Auburn's got a shot Saturday night. I mean, just A&M has been able to they've been able to make plays when they needed to. That's been a problem for Auburn. But I look at the fact that A&M is in the bottom half of the SEC in rush defense. If Auburn can run the ball and prevent some turnovers, I think the fact that it's a night game, it's the last home game for a big senior class, and A&M's got Texas next week. It sounds crazy since Auburn's got Alabama next week, but I think it's much more likely that A&M might be looking ahead a week than Auburn would be heading into their final home game.
You know, I think this has the best chance of being the closest game of the weekend. Now, the game we just talked about with LSU-Vandy, if LSU continues to struggle on both sides, then Vandy could go in there and beat them in a close game. But I think this game should be the best game of the weekend. Of course, it's that glorious two-year anniversary of when isn't that the greatest, like, upset from a coaching salary standpoint? Wasn't Cadillac making like $400,000 and Jimbo 9.5 million?
Yeah, it's like 10%.
So
yeah, you're right.
But,
or 1%, would it? Yeah.
So I you know, I do. I think Auburn plays really well. It's just, you know, I've compared Auburn and Florida. They've been so similar the last two or three years, because you're talking about teams that have proud traditions, teams that have won national championships fairly recently, you know, certainly within the generation. And they're teams that you just seem like you need name tags for every year. You know, you're flipping the half of the roster every year, it seems. But, you know, Florida came through last week and got that big win over a ranked team. I know LSU, they knocked them out. But, I mean, that was a nice win to say, hey, it was a disappointing year, but we did take down LSU. Auburn still doesn't really have one of those, just because Kentucky's obviously not a traditional rival, and they've beaten Kentucky and Lexington every time they've played in my lifetime, which is still staggering. But, no, I just think that Auburn – this would help their season. I mean, I don't like their chances of going to Tuscaloosa next week. So I do think it's the difference in 4-8 or 5-7. But even if it's 5-7, you can at least say, hey, we did get that one ranked win.
Yeah, that's something they haven't done in 3 years. So it would be huge for them. What are your plans this weekend? Where are you heading? You got a game this weekend?
You know, it's funny. You're talking about the rare night games at Jordan-Hare. This is my first lunchtime kickoff in Knoxville since the season opener against Chattanooga. That's how long UT's gone between lunchtime games. They've only had one other game all year that's kicked off in the daytime, and that was Alabama. That was the 3:30 game when Georgia-Texas was 7:30. So I am delighted to have an afternoon game and not get I went to Athens this past weekend, came home, and head hit pillow at 4:45 a.m. So I am definitely looking for a reprieve on that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're getting that opportunity. It shouldn't be a nail biter, I wouldn't think, against UTEP.
No, UTK and UTEP should not be close.
All right, David, we really appreciate you spending time with us. Hope you enjoy your trip. I tell you what, I'll text you and see if we can do something. What is your schedule next week? Obviously, none of us are going to be on Thanksgiving.
Right, we don't have shows. Actually, we don't have shows Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Wednesday's just because of a Tennessee basketball game that preempts it. But Wednesday or Friday should be pretty flexible.
Yeah, we're definitely on Friday, the day before the Iron Bowl. There's no way we wouldn't be on for that. So I'll look and I'll get with you and we'd be glad to get you on again next week.
That sounds great. Justin, I'm envious. I hope you and the newlywed have a wonderful time.
Yeah, thank you, David. We've been looking forward to it for quite some time.
Awesome. You've earned it.
Thank you, bud.
David, hey, let everybody know how they can keep up with you both on the air and in print.
TimesFreePress.com for the articles, and WGOW is Sport Talk, and then that's 2 to 5 Central.
All right, David, and if we don't talk to you before, happy Thanksgiving.
You do the same. Y'all have a great time, and Justin, have so much fun. I know you will.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks.
David Pascal joins us every Thursday here on The Drive. And, yes, just in case folks were wondering, no, we won't have a show on Thanksgiving, but we will be on Wednesday and Friday. Now, Drew, you're gone starting Wednesday, right? Yeah, so we'll figure it out. I think Dan's in town.
I think he is.
All week, so So we will be on. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Big eating in Auburn and Opelika means Big Mike Steakhouse.
NAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday evening. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. What's Texas A&M's status for the game? If we beat them and they beat Texas, are they in the SEC championship game?
That is a really good question. If Auburn beats A&M and they beat Texas, you're liable to have six teams with two losses. And the first tiebreaker is head-to-head with the other teams that have the same record. I don't know. That's a really good question. I think there's a chance they'd be in.
Yeah, I guess
like somebody would have to.
Yeah, I mean, we have to sit and look
up on a map.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, that is crazy. All right, so you'd have, because you could have Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Texas, Texas A&M, and who's the sixth? Who am I leaving out? That's got two losses right now. Ole Miss. So,
yeah, that's crazy to think about.
A&M, see, the thing is, A&M would be 1-0. Did they only play? I mean, A&M and Texas' schedules both have been pretty dang fortuitous because, A&M would be 1-0 against the other five teams. So, yeah, they'd probably be in. Because I believe it goes by winning percentage. You can't top 1,000.
Right. Well, I was just curious. I didn't know. I'm probably laying some money on Auburn this weekend. I just sneaking suspicion, like you said, night game at Auburn, tend to lean that way. This whole playoff, who gets in, who gets left out. The only way you're ever going to settle it, like if you want an NFL-style playoff, you would just have to take the conference champion and the conference runners-up, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. You can't,
right.
But that's the only way you ever do it. If you did the four teams or the four major conference champions, the conference runner-up, and you can leave it up to the conference to decide how they want to do it, it would encourage divisions in the conferences again, because that's going to be the only cut-and-dry way for them to determine a champion, you know, to determine who that second team is. And that may encourage the SEC to go to nine games at that point. Go to divisions, play nine games. That way your two division winners playing the championship, and then whoever wins your championship is still playing for a bye. So it's not like the championship game doesn't mean anything anymore. Like, you know, but that's the only way to do it. And you have to limit the conferences to two teams, and you'll never get them to agree to that.
Yeah, no, I agree. You have forfeited your right to kind of sort this stuff out because everyone's kind of just gone on for themselves, you know?
Yeah. Everybody wants to cry and complain like, oh, we think three or four of the SEC teams deserve to get in, or three or four of the teams from the Big Ten deserve to get in. As long as you're leaving it that vague and you're having to leave it, because if you know, people complained when it was a BCS and there were computers. Oh, the computers were too involved. We didn't like the way that worked out, so we went and did away with the computers. You know, like, you're never going to settle anything until you say, these are the rules, this is how you get in. And by doing that, you may have the number five team in the country get left at home. But I'm one of those that says, so be it. Like, at least it gets settled on the field.
Yeah, at least you have some transparency.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's not one of those things where
you're not.
It's like the Florida State thing last year.
Right.
I mean, we all watched Florida State get taken out of a playoff for something completely out of their control.
Yeah, for Jordan Travis going down.
For something completely out of their control, and it was like, okay, once we've crossed that, it's like, what, you know, everything's subjective at this point. So yes, I'm with you. Like, it'd be great to go to some sort of objectivity. The problem is,
oh, I'd love to have it in black and white and go, hey, everybody knows.
Everyone has just expanded their conference, changed everything for themselves. There's been no cooperation, and you know, this is why we're in the mess we're in.
And Jeremy, I looked at it while you guys were talking there for a second. Yes, if Auburn beat A&M and A&M beat Texas, A&M would be the top seed in the. I mean, they'd be like the home team in the SEC championship, and Georgia would be their opponent. A&M's 1-0, Georgia would be 2-1, and then Alabama and Tennessee are 1-1, Ole Miss and Texas would be 0-1. So it would be A&M and Georgia in the SEC championship game if your scenario happened.
Well, and they're in just the exact opposite scenario if they lose to us. If they lost to us, I mean, if they beat us but then lost to Texas, they're also out. For that very same reason. Like, they would lose all those two team tiebreakers because they would be 0-1.
Well, no. The loss to Auburn doesn't count as a loss against those head to head other teams. I think they'd still be 1-0 in that situation.
Well, no. I said if they beat Auburn but lose to Texas.
Oh, right. Yeah, they'd be 0-1. You're right.
At that point?
Yes. Yes, they would be.
Well, even though Texas would only have one loss then, so it would be between Texas. So at that point, Texas A&M would not have played a game against those other five teams.
No, they'd be 0-1, so they would be out, and that would put, that would knock them out. So this game doesn't really matter as far as A&M getting in the SEC championship game, but it does matter. I mean, then they'd need to win the SEC championship game because I still think an A&M team with three losses. Oh, no, but if they win, yeah. I mean, an A&M team with three losses isn't going to get in. And then, of course, if they went to the championship game and lost, that's their fourth loss. And then, boy, you've got a lot of people that aren't happy. Sure. I mean, if A&M team got in to the – I don't know. You'd probably have the teams with two losses that don't make the conference championship game happy that they're not going to at least take a third loss before the playoffs.
Well, and see, that's where, like, if you want the conference championship games to mean something, you need to be playing your way to get there, to get into the mm-hmm. playoffs.
I agree.
One other quick thing. Do you think we're in this boat because the football's been that good this year, or has the football taken a step back?
No, I don't think football.
I think football has been. I'm not going to call it bad, but it hasn't been good.
I think it's been more balanced. There have been more okay teams and fewer great teams.
Nobody getting left out this year. You're going to shake your head and say, "Oh, that's a good team that got left out of the playoffs." I don't think anybody's saying that.
No, there are probably going to be a couple that you go, they're as good as a team or two that's in it, but no. That's right.
Yeah, I'm just not worried about anybody that gets left out of it this year for whatever reason. Like whoever they end up picking, like I genuinely don't care. I just think we're looking at a bunch of just like I said. I don't want to call it mediocre, but it's just been barely above mediocre football all season, all across the country.
I agree.
That's just my
a lot of parity. There's like no doubt about it.
Ask Don Dunn that question. Like, what's his opinion?
I'll ask him that tomorrow. Hey, we got to run, Jeremy.
All right, guys.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, we're a little behind. Got to get to the bottom of the hour break. Tiger Takes with Dylan Cardwell coming up on the other side. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday evening, and it's time now for Tiger Takes, featuring Auburn basketball center Dylan Cardwell, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Visit them today at 217 North College Street or book online at 12ksalon.net. And here's Jacob Goins.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, as we sit down for a weekly interview with Dylan Cardwell from Auburn Basketball for Tiger Takes. It's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. You can make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. Dylan, great to have you back on ESPN, my man. And look, Monday night was a lot of fun. You guys got another big win, 102-69 over North Alabama.
Yes, sir. I'm blessed to be back. Another great game. Didn't start too hot, but you know, we closed well.
Well, what was it in that game where it seemed like it was almost on the defensive end where North Alabama was able to kind of find a little bit of a rhythm? And look, they've got some good playmakers on that team. I think you guys knew that coming in, but we were able to see that on Monday between Jakari Lane and even a guy, Daniel Ortiz, off the bench. I mean, they had some playmakers on that side.
Yeah, they sure did, and it is tough covers, tough to stay in front of. You know, I just don't know what to say about them. They're just two tough guys. You know, Dan Ortiz made some huge shots that we weren't expecting him to make, and you know, kudos to those guys. And obviously, our coach was very adamant the whole year that the toughest cover we'll probably have as a team is Jakari Lane.
Well, you look at what you guys were able to do on Monday night, and 102 points, Dylan, is nothing to be too upset about. 102 points, 50 in the first half, 52 in the second half. And for you in particular, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's a career high for you with 12 points. Is that right?
Yeah, so I just can't get past 12, apparently. I've got 12, you know, three times.
Well, what was working for you? I mean, you had 5 of 6 from the floor. Both of your free throws you knocked down, had 3 rebounds, 2 assists, had a block as well. I mean, what was working for you in particular on Monday?
Well, you know, my focus was just to be the best, you know, athlete on the floor. You know, understanding that I'm 6'11", 250, 260, and so it's just a hard guy to stay in front of. I'm always working on my game, and so just letting the work show.
And you were in the starting lineup again. It was Denver, CBM, Miles, Janai, and you. How do you feel with that starting five in particular? I actually asked Bruce Pearl about it Monday night in the postgame presser, and he said, look, the starting five is still may not be set. We change things up, but those five guys, you included, of course, are the ones who have earned the right to be on the floor to start the game. What is it about those five guys that really works for you?
I just think we're all veterans, you know. We're all vets, and we're a lengthy lineup, pretty good defensively. You know, We like I said, we start off the game kind of slow, but if you look at the second half, UNA is known for starting second halves off really hot. And what we did is, as a unit, for all the vets, we got together before halftime, after halftime. We were like, yo, like, we got to make sure we start off on fire. That's what we did. They didn't score for 4 minutes on our group. And so I just, this group that we have, it's a really great group. And like I said, all vets and pretty lengthy lineup.
And got to talk about your counterpart for just a second, Janai, who had an unbelievable night. 30 points, 17 rebounds, 13 of 17 from the floor. Even knocked down a three as well. He steps out and knocks one down every now and then. What's it like with the really just a really hard 1-2 punch between him and you when you're both on the floor at the same time?
Yeah, I believe you're the best front court in the country with, you know, us two and Chaney. I mean, what a way for Chaney to step up this year and pick up the slack of where Jay Will left off. You know, I mean, it's been great to have all three of us. And but man, yeah, Janai is just insane. I actually told Bruce Pearl the last 4 minutes of the game, I don't want to play anymore because I wanted Janai to get 30 and 20. I've never seen it being done in person, and it's been a heck of a feat. It would probably be in the record books for the rest of Auburn history. And so I was adamant about that, but obviously player safety comes first, and we didn't need Janai to get a stupid stat. We have more important coming up.
Right, and that wasn't from you. That wasn't coming from a place of, I don't want to play anymore. You really were being a team guy. It's like, hey, this guy's on a roll. Let's see what he can do out there, right?
Yeah, not for real. I mean, he has his spurts where he can score 8 in a row, and I'm like, shoot, I don't mind watching.
You just want to be a fan and cheer on like the rest of us.
Yeah, I just want to win. At the end of the day, I just want to win. And I mean, Janai is a huge, role in us winning. So,
and you guys got to be fans a little bit at the end of the game. Those are a lot of fun when they get out of hand, right? 102-69 final score. But when some of those guys start getting in the game, right? You had Presley knock one down. You had a guy shooting and scoring. I mean, CJ scored there at the end too. And you guys just get so into it when those guys who maybe don't see as much playing time in the game, when they do finally get in and start knocking down some shots. I love watching the bench react to that.
Yeah, you know, I was very adamant about that as well. Like, when the walkers are in the game, I mean, let it be their turn. You know, last year, we had some guys who were playing garbage minutes who wanted it to be their turn, and they wouldn't pass to the walk-ons. I'm just like, you know, we've had our opportunity. You know, we've played enough minutes, and they only get 1 minute. They're only guaranteed 1 minute, pretty much. And so why not give them the ball? Why not let them shoot?
That's awesome, man.
As soon as they got in the game, I told Simo, I said, you and I, we're not shooting the ball. We're going to give it to these guys. And so you can see even for CJ Williams' shot, I had a layup that I could have shot, but I just passed it to him because I knew, like I said, like his dad, one of our coaches, his family's in the stands, and he doesn't get much of an opportunity to play for us. Why not give him something he can talk about for the rest of his life, you know?
Yeah.
Just little things.
That's awesome, man. That really, and look, I think that speaks to what you guys are, to what this particular unit is. And during your time, I mean, I'm not in the locker room and don't know the team like that, but it seems like for the most part, you and the squads that you've been a part of have been really tight like that and have been able to celebrate each other like that, huh?
Yes, sir, we have. And it's a testament to the work we put in the summer, you know, and the guys that, Bruce Pearl brings in.
Auburn is now 4-0. They take down North Alabama on Monday, and you guys are going to be hopping on a plane heading down to Maui, taking a heck of a trip and going to be playing some really, really exciting competition. The only team that you know of for now, Dylan, is what is currently a top 5 matchup against the Cyclones of Iowa State. Have you had any chance to look at them at all or have any idea what they're going to be bringing in that first game coming up next week?
I just know, I have no idea what they look like. We haven't scouted them yet. We're off today, so we're not doing anything. But, I mean, from what I understand from Washington last year, they're pretty much identical to Houston. And they blew out Houston last year by 30 when they played a better Houston team. I mean, at Iowa State, you know, that's conference play, but still, they're on the same level of Houston. We can't take that for granted. We're not going to.
I mean, just so many big teams, Memphis, UConn, Colorado, Michigan State, Auburn, Iowa State, Dayton, and North Carolina. I mean, it doesn't matter what combination of teams you play. With those big names, you're going to have opportunities to get more big wins like you did against Houston and also play some teams that you may not see too often.
Yeah, and it's just a great opportunity. You know, Auburn wasn't in any conversations, you know, seven or eight years ago. And so it's a testament to what, you know, Bruce Pearl has helped build.
You and I were able to talk a little bit last week about these types of trips and what they mean off the basketball floor. And I want to dive into that a little bit as we talk with Dylan Cardwell, a center for Auburn basketball here for Tiger Takes on ESPN 106.7. There is very, very important basketball happening. And ultimately, that's why you're there, is to try and compete and win games. But in these types of these trips where you're all together for long periods of time in between the games, right? What do you guys typically do as a team? And what do you try to accomplish off the floor?
Really just, you know, it's kind of like AAU, just being kids, you know, playing video games. Pretty much all we really do, we play this game called Undisputed. It's a boxing game. And we just, we box or we play college football.
That's awesome. I love it, man. And you guys are going to have a great opportunity to do that. You get a guaranteed three games, as far as I'm concerned, in the Maui Invitational. Whether you win or lose, I mean, again, you're going to start out with Iowa State. You're either going to play Dayton or North Carolina, depending on how the results of these games go. And then at the top of it, like I said, Michigan State, Colorado, UConn, and Memphis, some of the biggest brands in college basketball. So really, really looking forward to what Maui has to offer. And then, Dylan, your reward, right, for going and playing in the Maui Invitational is then traveling out to Durham to take on Duke at Cameron Indoor. We'll have a chance to talk a little bit more about this, but just want to get your early thoughts on your trip going out to take on Duke inside of Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Yeah, it's a blessing. I grew up a Duke fan the year before they I was on a bandwagon. Before they,
let's make that clear. You were not a Duke bandwagon.
Yeah, no. I got introduced to Duke by watching YouTube highlights, and this Duke team just kept showing up on my YouTube when I was in like the fifth grade. I was like, oh, I guess I'll just be a fan of them. And so my first year being a Duke fan, well, second year being a Duke fan, because they got beat by Mercer my sixth grade year, the first round. But my seventh grade year, I was a Duke fan again, obviously, and they won the national championship. And everybody, oh my gosh, you bandwagon. I'm like, no, I'm a Duke fan because of YouTube. And so growing up a Duke fan and just always being a huge fan of them and that 2015 team, and obviously Coach K and the history of Duke, I mean, it's just a blessing to be able to play at Cameron Indoor. And I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm grateful they didn't come to Neville. I wanted to go there. So
yeah.
I'm very excited. Every kid dreams about putting on that Duke uniform because it means something.
And so I assume this will be your first time ever going to Cameron Indoor?
Second. I went there as a kid just to tour around. Like I said, my mom, I was just a big fan. My mom just drove us up there one day and we just toured Duke when I was in eighth grade.
That's awesome. Heck yeah. Well, I mean, I know it's a very, very special place. One of the most historic venues in all of college basketball. And so you guys will play in Maui. Then you'll go to Duke. You come home for a quick game against Richmond before playing Ohio State and Atlanta. I know you guys like playing over there at State Farm Arena. Purdue is still on that schedule. And I'm sure you saw what they did to Alabama a few nights ago. And so, I mean, this schedule is about to ramp up, man. But you guys just have some great opportunities to learn who you are and get some of those signature wins.
Oh yeah, it's going to be great. Great resume builders, great experience going to SEC play.
And so, but before we wrap up, I mean, just through the first four games of the season, is there anything or anybody that has kind of surprised you or something that you've learned about this team? I mean, the win over Houston, I'm sure you can take a ton away from, but even in some of these other games where you've pulled away and this team has dominated and shown that early dominance now as a top five team, anything has stood out to you in the first few games of the season?
Yeah, the word that comes to my mind is just unsung heroes, man. We just have so many guys. We're just such a deep team to where, you know, these guys go on little spurts of like 10 points, which last year would have been, you know, they've been playing the game. But we have so many guys go on multiple spurts a game where it's like you don't know who to give the credit to. You don't know who to talk about most, you know, like for example, Chad Baker. I mean, this guy starts out the game with, you know, two threes. He does this every game, you know, and he gets it going. And then out of nowhere, here comes Denver Jones. And then here comes, you know, Miles Kelly. And then you have a second half resurgence every game by Janai. And then, you know, obviously Chaney and Janai close the games. It's just like, you don't know who to talk about.
Right.
It's just the consistency of this team as a unit. And then I want to give some praise to my dog, Chris Moore, who's just one of the better defensive players in the country. I mean, he's just stepped it up this year as far as his defensive physicality and getting some huge stops for us. I mean, he does so many little things to help us win. And like I said, there's just so much to go around. Every player on the court at all times is just amazing.
And that's what makes you guys so dangerous. I mean, it really does. And against all these big name teams that you're going to go up against, I mean, I watch a lot of college basketball, Dylan, and I just don't know if there's a team in the country that's as deep as you guys are. And to what you were saying, I mean, it literally could be somebody different every single night that's the difference maker against an Iowa State or a Michigan State or a Duke or a Purdue. Or heck, even when you get into SEC play, I mean, you know this, you need guys like that to step up on a Tuesday night when you're on the road somewhere.
Oh yeah, that's going to come in clutch in Maui. I mean, like I said, we have, you know, 10, 11 guys that can all score double digit points. You know, when you're a tournament like that, playing back-to-back-to-back, you need your depth.
Dylan Cardwell, Auburn Basketball Center. He joins us every week here on ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. Going to be a little couple sporadic weeks, I guess, with Thanksgiving, and then we'll obviously have Christmas coming around and stuff, but we're going to continue to get him on as much as we can. Look, you guys are going to have a lot of fun, and hopefully you guys are able to bring back some big, big-time wins. Safe travels to you and the team down to Maui. Everybody's looking forward to it. I know the time change is going to be a little bit different, but, man, you got to just be looking forward to the opportunity to play some big time opponents, and we're looking forward to watching it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, War Eagle.
Yes, sir. That's Dylan Cardwell joining us on ESPN 106.7. He's with us every single week for Tiger Takes.
And Tiger Takes brought to you once again by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Call to book your next appointment at 334-209-2900. Back to wrap things up here on the Thursday Drive.
Big Eating in Auburn and Opal.